If your money requires permission to be spent, it is not your money. If your money has counterparty risk, it is not money, but credit. If your money steals from you, it is not your money, but a control and financing mechanism for your government. If your money requires identity, it is not money, but a social credit score system. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we do have a couple of Guy's Takes episodes coming up, and we have a couple of interviews that I have planned as well. So we've got some of the other formats of this show coming soon, but we have so many reads that I am just so behind on, and there are so many good ones, man. There are just too many right now that deserve audio, so I am going to stay on top of it. And we have a short but amazing read today from Dirjiji. And Gigi has posted a ton of stuff recently, and I know he's been working a massive amount on his new book, 21 Ways, the sequel to 21 Lessons, which if you haven't heard that one and or read that one, it's on Audible, it's available on his website, it's available in Audible form, both on his website and on the podcast, but it's a phenomenal, phenomenal book if you haven't read it, and it's not that long. It's basically bite-sized, basically epiphanies that Gigi had as he understood and came to have aha moments and realizations about things that he either didn't understand or understood in a very different way before Bitcoin taught him otherwise. But we've done a couple of chapters of 21 Ways, the new book, available on the show already. I will link to them in the details. They are must reads or must listens if you haven't gotten to them yet. And I really, especially in particular, I'm a huge fan of the one about digital money versus virtual money. That one is so good. But I don't have a lot of time today, so I just didn't want to leave you guys with nothing since I've had such a big gap over the holidays. So with that, we are going to read an excellent little article from Gigi today called Bitcoin is the Rediscovery of Money. Real fast, let's thank our sponsors for the show. Swan Bitcoin is where you buy your Bitcoin. Foldcard is where you stack your Bitcoin on fiat expenses. The cold card is how you safely lock your Bitcoin so nobody else can get them. Swan Bitcoin is where you learn everything there is to know about Bitcoin. The Fold app is where you get even more sats back on gift cards. And the Open Dime is the original physical Bitcoin. Swan Private is how you get your IRA, business, or trust hooked into Bitcoin. The Fold app is where you get sats for free every day because it's a new day and you deserve sats. And the Block Clock is how you get Moscow time all the time. Find out more thanks to the convenient links copied and pasted right in the description of this podcast episode. With discounts and more free sats for the people who like affordability and sound money. You are welcome. Amen. And with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, Bitcoin is the Rediscovery of Money by Dirjiji. Bitcoin is the rediscovery of money. It is money reconsidered. It is the removal of counterparty risk. It is the purest, fastest, soundest money reimagined from the ground up. It is computational proof of historical events, building up an incorruptible history without relying on trust. Bitcoin is the realization that cryptography is not enough. It is the admission that trusted third parties are security holes. It is an impenetrable fortress of validation, telling the world that invalid blocks need not apply. By reintroducing trust, be it via the linguistic attack that is proof of stake, or be it via the regulatory attack that is centralized exchanges and custodians, Crypto is destroying everything that makes Satoshi's invention great in the first place. Most people haven't understood yet that Bitcoin is different. It is not a company. It can't go bankrupt. It has no CEO that can be influenced, arrested, or corrupted. It is a force of nature, like the tide coming in and out, like the sun rising in the east. You can have an opinion on it, but your opinion won't influence it in any way. Every 10 minutes, Bitcoin reasserts itself. Every 10 minutes, it cements a message in its time chain. You shall not steal. Bitcoin's monetary policy is set in time, not by decree. It can't be changed. It can't be argued with. It is unrelated to demand, unrelated to energy usage, and independent from politics. The weak copies that we refer to as shitcoins are oblivious to the nature of Bitcoin. They are oblivious to the nature of money, even, believing that, quote, your money has to work for you, believing that money has to earn some sort of yield, that money itself should make a nominal profit. No, your money just has to work, period. Your money should be yours and yours alone, and it should not steal from you. If your money requires permission to be spent, it is not your money. If your money has counterparty risk, it is not money, but credit. If your money steals from you, it is not your money, but a control and financing mechanism of your government. If your money requires identity, it is not money, but a social credit score system. Money has no yield. Money has no counterparty risk. Money is not credit. Money does not need to grow. Money doesn't require identity. Money has no memory. The whole point of money is to not know your customer, as an Italian comedian once said. Bitcoin is an answer to the moral failings of fiat money and our fiat monetary institutions. Quote, crypto is a reincarnation of these failing institutions, replacing the friendly faces of clean-shaven bankers with the shy smiles of unkempt teenagers. Some call it progress. I call it unethical. Money is as important as it is invisible. The importance of money only comes to the forefront when money dies, something that arguably is happening at a global scale as I am typing these words. We forgot what money is. We forgot the wisdom of old, the importance of honest weights and measures. We forgot that usury is a sin, that love of money for money's sake is the root of all evil. Consequently, we ignored the root of all monetary evil for far too long, the government monopoly on the issuance and control of money. Money production is an ethical question. The printing of money is a moral failure. And shitcoinery is nothing but money printing hidden behind the veil of confusion, technobabble, and supposed innovation, or worse, altruism. Bitcoin is honest, fair, and truthful. It is nonviolent and voluntary. It is a lifeboat and an exit, and not to be conflated with the myriad of shitcoins that are riding its coattails. The immaculate conception, chronological issuance, and organic growth of Bitcoin are what sets it apart. Its lack of counterparty risk is what makes it money. Its lack of leadership is what makes it decentralized. Its computational proof of the order of events is what makes it independently verifiable and irreversible. Its difficulty adjustment is what makes it an autopoietic system, capable of maintaining and reproducing itself. All shitcoins will wither into irrelevance as a consequence of Bitcoin's continued existence. They will become irrelevant because the game of money is a game of liquidity and purchasing power, and in this game, only the strong survive. The world is rearranging itself. It is rearranging itself because we have forgotten what money is. It is rearranging itself because the current incarnation of money, government-issued debt that steals from the poor and gives to the rich, is breaking. And while it is breaking, Bitcoin will march on. Every 10 minutes, a new block is found. Every 10 minutes, Bitcoin reasserts itself. Every 10 minutes. And you can be a part of it. You can do the work, educate yourself, hold your own keys, and run your own node. That's all that Bitcoin requires of you, a little bit of responsibility. If you don't hold your own keys, you don't hold Bitcoin, but IOUs. If you don't run your own node, you have no say in Bitcoin. You are beholden to someone else's idea of Bitcoin. For Bitcoin to be your money, you have to hold your own keys, and you have to verify with your own node. And with that, you too can rediscover money. You can rediscover what it means to have deep stability and autonomy. You can put in the work, and you can transform yourself into a sovereign individual. You don't need to ask for anyone's permission. All you need is some curiosity, or a lot of pain. I hope for your sake that it is curiosity that will bring you to Bitcoin. Bitcoin can kindle curiosity if you're ready for it. Shitcoins, custodians, and the fiat monetary system will bring the pain. The choice is yours, and you have all the time in the world to make it, because Bitcoin is, and that is enough. It is not hiding, but waiting, out in the open, ready to be discovered. And with every soul that sees Bitcoin for what it is, a larger part of humanity will rediscover what money is. All right, that wraps up Dirgigi's piece, Bitcoin is the Rediscovery of Money. And just so you know, there is a plethora of links available in this, like practically every sentence that is like a declaration. It's like, it is money reconsidered, is a link to a deeper conversation on some particular topic or behind some claim. That one in particular is just the first one in the article, and it's The Yield from Money Held Reconsidered by Hans Hermann Hoppe, which is also available in audio on this show, and we do quite a guy's take on that one, if I remember correctly, because I love that piece. But that is all just to say there is a ton of rabbit hole further journey to take by going to this article. So I will have the link in the show notes. And obviously there is just an ocean of stuff that Gigi has produced and written and done all sorts of things available on his website, dirgigi.com. And that is where you will find this article and all of those other goodies, as well as a lot of it in my lovely voice for your listening pleasure. But I love this framing. It is the rediscovery of money. It's funny, we don't have money anymore. We really don't. But we have built a society around the imitation of money. This is actually one of the reasons I mention Gigi's other piece, Virtual. I think the piece is just titled Digital Money, but it's about the difference between virtual money and digital money, and how a virtual thing, the analogy that I thought was really, really good was that a virtual thing is a copy of the thing that's trying to imitate it, but doesn't actually have its characteristics. Like a video game has a virtual, you know, you're driving, Grand Theft Auto being an example that came to mind, is you're driving around in a fake car in the video game, and you have a fake radio in the car. You have a virtual radio. It's pretending to be a radio in the video game, but it's obviously not a real radio. Whereas a digital radio is a real radio, just built with digital technology instead of analog. So in that same sense, every money that we have had to date is a virtual money. It is different in size and in scope, but not in kind. So Linden bucks and World of Warcraft gold and the Federal Reserve and the US dollar are of the exact same type of system. They all three have masters. They all three run on their own infrastructure and their servers. They are all censorable. They are all surveilled. They are all centrally issued and controlled. And they all attempt to imitate the characteristics of what a real money is. But essentially, they are all either some form of credit or a virtual money, an imitation of what money is meant to be. Whereas Bitcoin is the first digital money. It creates the characteristics of money in a true sense, in a provable and verifiable sense. It creates a real history that is provably incorruptible, that is impossible to reverse. And importantly, it is irreversible without the permission of anyone. It is irreversible without needing to trust that someone says it's irreversible, or that someone is properly controlling it such that it is irreversible. It is irreversible just by the stamp of the proof of work on it. You know how much it cost. You know, you see the energy expenditure by the simple number posted with the block every 10 minutes as block moves itself forward chronologically into the future. That is powerful. It happens without anyone's permission. It happens without anyone's diktat. It happens without needing anyone else to know or prove anything about it. You can do it locally. You can do it yourself and know that there is a massive amount of energy expenditure created or expended in order to make Bitcoin something that doesn't go backward, something that has a provable history that only steps forward in time. Essentially, it creates through a series, through cryptography, through an economic game theory, through a systems design and a decentralized network design, Bitcoin is able to establish the characteristics, all of the critical characteristics of money, in fact, improve upon the critical characteristics of money that we have seen in previous monies before, and solidify them, make them extremely concrete and visible, auditable, and do so with nothing but digital tools. And one of the fascinating things about that to me is that it changes the conversation. You know, when a new innovation or a new technology comes about, and it almost inherently separates and hones whatever it's trying to accomplish. And there are periodically these fundamental game changers, these massive shifts in how something is done or how something is implemented, such that it actually changes what we thought we knew about it. We didn't realize that it could be implemented or created in that way. Gold is such a great example, the shift from gold to Bitcoin. Because gold, and particularly gold bugs, have a massive failure to understand why gold is actually good money, and to recognize that it's not because of some individual utility that gold is redeemable or valuable as a good money. In fact, what makes it good money is the fact that it holds a premium. It holds a monetary premium that prices out all of its utility value, that you don't use it for all of the other reasons you might use it, specifically because it's too valuable as a money. But what's funny is when all of your monies are physical, when the money that you use and all of the previous monies before are strictly physical items, it actually obscures the fundamental purpose and the nuance in what money actually is. And when you first create a digital money, when the first digital money exists, you suddenly have to reframe. You have to think, oh, well, I have used it as a crutch to say that money is definitely a physical thing. And even though we haven't used physical money for 100 years, we've used a virtual money that attempts to imitate what real money actually is supposed to do and the characteristics that are important to real money. I still refuse to, because it is, in fact, an imitation, it's a refusal to hone your definition. It's a refusal to hone the understanding of what role and what value money is actually providing. Money is a network technology. It is fundamentally information. But we've lost that. We've lost that understanding, or maybe really we never had a technology, a monetary technology that was pure enough to make it clear that that was the case. But we do now. We do now, and it is slowly but surely creeping like a virus into everybody's minds, and it is going to continue to do so because it is not going to go away. And it is going to continue to be that contradiction to what everyone believes about virtual money, about how government debt is money. Debt is not money. Debt is credit. Debt is counterparty risk. Debt is a promise of someone who may or may not have resources. Money is a resource in and to itself. Money is a good within the market that has its own value because of what money can do for the economy that uses it. In the exact same way that the internet has value, regardless of the things on the internet. But then at the exact same time, the things on the internet, the servers, the services, the technology, the software, are what give the internet its value, because the purpose of the internet is to connect all of that information, is to connect all of the people on the internet, all of the services, the products with the buyers. That connection is valuable by itself, but the things that it is able to connect is the reflection of its value. In that same way, that's what money is. Money is that thing that has integrity and can establish that connection with things of value in the real world without cheating you, without exposing you to a set of uncertainties, without exposing you to credit risk, with counterparty risk. Because money is that thing that emerges that is explicitly protection against counterparty risk. That is why a money exists, so that you can hedge against uncertainty. Probably my favorite quote from this piece is, there's a couple of good lines, but it says, "If your money requires permission to be spent, it is not your money. If your money has counterparty risk, it is not money, but credit. If your money steals from you, it is not your money, but a control and financing mechanism of your government. If your money requires identity, it is not money, but a social credit score system." It's so crazy to me that people have associated all of these things with money, when any historical examination of what money is and why it emerges in society, you understand, you don't need to know what money is. Nobody ever wrote up a paper and said, "I would like to invent money. It would be really nice if we had these things with these characteristics." It emerged in society as whatever good was being traded for whatever reason, collectible, jewelry, utility for some other reason, like preserving food, salt being a good example, hide as being kind of a universal, incredibly universal, incredibly useful good across, you know, almost essentially any economy. And then the metallic metals, like all of these things arose on the market before anyone ever thought that they could be used for anything other than their utility. People simply recognized that these things were desirable and they had the most explicit characteristics to serve the role of taking them across time, taking them across space, and taking them across a scale. That you could have a ton of this thing or a small amount of this thing, and that it continues to communicate value across all of those things. I can't take my house across the country and trade it for later, but money was able to do that for me. I can't necessarily take my house into the future and think that it's going to be worth something. Maintenance costs, it's going to rot, it's going to degrade, just like chicken. My chicken sandwich is not worth the same in 2 weeks as it is today. It's disgusting in 2 weeks. And 50 chicken sandwiches is not worth 50 chicken sandwiches to one person as one chicken sandwich is. Maybe you want two sandwiches for lunch, but what the hell are you going to do with the other 48? Money emerges because of how critical and astonishingly valuable it is as a network technology, despite the ignorance of everyone who uses it. No one, not a single soul on planet Earth, needs to know the first damn thing about money for a good money to emerge in the society. It never did. It was thousands of years after we used money that we looked back and said, "What the hell is this thing exactly, and why is it different from all these other things?" We discovered money far after it became ubiquitous. But today, because we have used nothing but virtual money, we equate the properties of money with all of the failures of our money imitations today. We equate it to its surveillance. We equate it to its control. We equate it to the credit of someone who is untrustworthy and never fulfills their promises. We equate it with political permission, with a social judgment of one's reputation as to whether or not it is valuable. We equate that it has value only if it performs legitimate or approved trade. And we hold the fallacious belief that it is only valuable, that it is only trustworthy, if the person you are doing business with is trustworthy, when literally the brilliance of money and the reason money emerges is to fix all of those things. Those things are not money. Those things are the failures and the proof that what we are using today isn't money. But Bitcoin is that splinter. It is that contradiction in practice. It is that thing that exists and refuses to die in the minds of everyone who does not understand what money truly is. And you can see this because it pisses them off. It makes them very, very angry. Peter Schiff thinks about Bitcoin as much as I do. And it makes sense that the people who are most knowledgeable and who benefit the most, either A, from the way money works today, or just on the nature of money itself, or on historical monies, it makes sense that those most invested and those who think they are most knowledgeable about a topic would be most aggressively against anything that challenged what they know, anything that challenges their position, and that the money, Krugman is a great example, and the entire political sphere, is the idea of a money that challenges their very existence. They're important because of their relationship to our money. And if Bitcoin works, if Bitcoin is not a failure or a misunderstanding or just thin air, a silly toy for, you know, libertarian morons, if Bitcoin is anything like money, to the point that it could be better than fiat money, it means that they are valueless. It means that we live in a world where the thing that they believe makes them important and valuable no longer exists. It's not even relevant. They will be the last to understand. I hope, at least. And it would be much deserved. But that's why I've got all the time in the world. That's why I'm fine to go through another bear market and another one after that. Because there's no time limit on this. We've got a long, long road ahead of us. But we are rediscovering money. And what's funny is that as slow and painful as it may seem at times, it is happening at a breakneck pace when you think about it in the context of monetary history. Like, monetary demonetizations and remonetizations of, you know, a new monetary good typically happen on the order of centuries. And it is only fiat money, it is only imitations of money that basically die and go up in puffs of smoke in a matter of a year or two. That's never happened with real money. Even things that have been technologically devalued, it still takes a long time for them to lose all of their value on the market. That's why I think gold will still have one more era before it is demonetized by Bitcoin. It will be short-lived, but I think it will, and maybe on like the midterm, like I think in the probably in the timescale of decades. But as fiat dies, I think gold will see a resurgence of relevance and value. But ultimately, it is Bitcoin that's going to teach us truly what money is. And it is enough of an advancement in the nature of money as to be so different, as to be such a leap forward, that we don't know exactly. Like, we know what a society looks like on a gold standard, and it's vastly better than society on a fiat standard. But we don't know what society looks like on a purely and perfectly sound money, perfectly auditable and perfectly incorruptible monetary good. That is fascinating just by itself, is that we will not only achieve the responsibility and the accountability and the prosperity that we saw in the late 1800s during the 30 or 40 year span in which we had the cleanest gold standard that we ever had and the closest thing to a global gold standard as was ever devised, that we will see that level of prosperity and growth and sustainability in the markets, but to an even greater degree in a world with the internet and where information can move, mix, reproduce, re-innovate, be re-envisioned, and commerce and trade, all of it can happen at the speed of light, and it happens in a global, instant market of ideas and exchange and innovation, and where you can truly have sovereign individuals, people who live in the global economy extra-nationally. I think it is the age of the sovereign individual. So, we will close this here. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you to Gigi for this among so many amazing pieces. I'll catch you on the next one. And until then, take it easy, guys. The basic causes of change are precisely those that are not subject to conscious control. James Dale Davidson, The Sovereign Individual.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.